Greetings. You're now listening to the most handsome and intellectually superior specimens on Earth. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. Starts now.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time of day it is where you are. We hope that you're doing well. I'm pleased to be able to bring you another episode of I Could Be Wrong, But I Doubt It. My name is Fresh, and we're thankful that you decided to join us today. Before we get to this week's episode, I'd like to remind you that if you'd like to hear it, please go to Apple Podcasts and rate a podcast and leave us a comment or two. Now, without further delay, let's get this thing rolling. I'd like to introduce my partner, who is a connoisseur of all things cultural. He's my partner. Podcast crime. Reg, what is the deal? Space age, nuclear, molecular, pivot.
Fresh, I hadn't seen you since the last time I saw you, brother. What's cool with you, bro?
You know how it is, man. Same old pimp. Yeah, fresh, yeah. Renewing, doesn't change but the limp.
Yeah, it is. Yes. What's your old ass?
Man, I'm telling you, man. I feel it sometimes too, man. This is, I'm gonna turn up like crazy, man, for the birthday this year, though, man. And, and it ain't even a milestone.
Yeah,
I'd have been caged up, man. It's time to let the lion loose, bruh.
I hear you. Hey, every day is a celebration, man. While you living,
for real.
So this, shit, it don't matter what. Shit, if it's an odd
like,
year,
you know what? Like, you know what, man?
I'm gonna have a birthday every day. Goddamn,
you know, this shit's crazy, bruh. It's just crazy, man. So, how you been, man?
Been pretty good, man. Just still learning, man. Still trying to figure this thing out daily.
I know how that shit goes, right?
trying to figure out daily, whatever it is, man.
So what are we gonna learn about today, man?
Man, I think it's time to sort of put some things in perspective with our HBCUs, those institutions, man, and what we can do. I think we had a show about barriers to unity that I think one of the things, the barriers to unity through economics, is how do we sort of galvanize our best resources, and I think HBCUs could be one way, or is one way, that we could sort of best capitalize on our youth and their minds and their energy.
Right.
So I mean, thought, you know, sort of funny, expound
it's
on
funny that.
That
you would mention HBCUs as a resource, man, because you know, when you talk about professions, when you talk about, you know, esteemed professions as people judge them by, if you know, traditional type of perceptions, you know, we talk about doctors and lawyers and pharmacists. HBCUs produce the overwhelming majority of blacks in those particular professions.
Definitely.
I mean, this isn't even close, bro. I mean, we're talking, it's like what? What's the percentage of black pharmacists that come out of HBCUs, from FAMU in particular?
I don't know, but it's up. Yeah, it's funny to say, FAMU is a pharmacy school.
But I mean,
yeah, it's a pharmacy school, but yeah, you're right.
This shit is not, I mean, it's in, the percentages aren't even close. So it's not like we're not, from a scholastic perspective, it's not like those particular institutions are not already a hotbed of good black resources already. But I think we're going to move towards more the with athletic side, to where you know, they have the potential to be even more of a diamond mine, if you will, for even more resources. So, you know, I didn't mean to hijack your thought, man. Go ahead.
No. I mean, it's a podcast, man. We're talking about it, and that's exactly right. And it's funny you mentioned athletes, because I think that's been an ongoing conversation piece in media and just amongst HBCU grads and alumni all together, is what it would be like, if I can get my words together, if some of these key athletes coming out of high school, if they chose HBCUs, right? And now we know that there's a lot that HBCUs could do better. Unfortunately, a lot of the administration and presidents are singing kumbaya and they collaborating with a lot of the same old same. They're not, many of them are not doing with their best, or they don't have the best. And from a leadership standpoint, bringing in the right curriculum, they just push them, everybody go work for, you know, corporations. And it's some things that we need to do. I'm thinking about Booker T. Washington and his self-reliance when he went to Tuskegee, and sort of made Tuskegee what it is. We need some of that. We need some of that self-reliance. We need some of that. That self-reliance will sort of help with empowering us to do for self. And I think a lot of that is missing. But going back to the athletes thing, we, what was it, 2 years now? Zion Williamson came out of Duke. Or when he was announcing that he was going to Duke, we were like, man, both his parents went to HBCUs, Livingstone College in Salisbury, North Carolina. His mom was a track star. I think his dad was a football. I think he played football or something. But anyway, what would he do if he said, you know what? I like Duke. I grew up a Duke fan. I'm going to take my talents to South Carolina State. I'm going to stay in the state, right? He grew up, he did his high school in Spartanburg, where I'm from. Most of it was in Florence. I'm going to go to South Carolina State. Do you know what economic impact it would make on Little Orangeburg, South Carolina?
It would be crazy, bro.
And it would be
crazy. And he was only staying for 1 year, regardless of where he went.
Right. And the money.
It ain't even really a year. It's they got to set up now to where you really, you can flunk the first semester and still just be on probation for the spring.
Dude.
So really, all you got, you really ain't doing nothing but playing basketball from October to the and if you're lucky, the first Monday in April.
Yeah, see, I mean,
the NCAA championship is always the first Monday in April. That you really ain't doing shit. You got 8 months, bro.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, he knew he was a one and done, and maybe let's just say it would take him 2 years if he went to a South Carolina State. Right. I mean, look at Ja Morant, who came out second, who's also a South Carolinian. He went to Murray State, and I think he stayed 3 years, three or four.
Mm-hmm.
Three. I could be off on. I think maybe I 3 years.
Went to Murray.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was. It may have maybe taken him a tad bit longer because of exposure or something. But my thing is with that talent, the camera's going to follow. ESPN's going to follow. All
they
these
found them.
They found them. And they'll find you. If you're talented, the money will come. The exposure will come. And when that comes, then that school is in bright lights. That community of that school is in bright lights, which brings other economic opportunities to the area, of hotels to shoot up, restaurants to shoot up, right? People who want to just beautify communities around it, right? Negotiations that the school can make with these media companies, which will bring in money so that they can build dorms and facilities or whatever. It's a domino effect. And so everywhere I go, I try to encourage people to send their children to HBCUs. Now, granted, I understand if sometimes money talks, right? And if they get a scholarship somewhere else that they couldn't HBCU for whatever. And if I get it. I mean, I'm not going to say shame on you, but I'm saying give it a shot. Right, give it a chance. I'm so fortunate. My niece, my only niece, she's a rising senior in high school out in California, and her number one school right now is FAMU. When she told me that, nigga, I've been on it, and I'm trying to
calls, man. You be like,
yeah, I got an interview with a professor, someone I went to school with, who's a professor. You know, she wants to be a psychology major. And so I gotta, you know, I'm just trying to,
you know, I got a classmate, man, that I grew up, man. Let me tell you, I think I've been knowing her for we'll talk offline. I don't have permission to use her name, but I've been knowing her for, I know I went to junior high school with her, so maybe 30 something.
Somebody that went to FAM, is that what you're saying?
Not only did she go to FAM, but she's actually a professor at FAM right now.
Oh, okay. We'll talk offline on that. That's cool.
Yeah, but yeah, man.
But yes, I see all that to say is that consider sending your child to those schools, because they are their need mostly of your child's talent and their minds.
Can I jump in real quick, man? Or you go ahead, bro. You tell me when you're done.
Go ahead.
I just want to kind of, you know, fast forward just a little bit because of the fact that, you know, we had that legislation that's in most states is being fast tracked at this particular point about athletes capitalizing financially off of their likeness while maintaining their eligibility.
Yeah.
So my whole thing is this. It's kind of like a, it's still a situation of the have and the have nots.
Mm-hmm.
Because these big Division I, quote unquote, schools have already mastered the art of funneling cash.
Mm-hmm.
So now when an athlete has the ability to profit off of their likeness, to do endorsements, to do things like that, that gives them another avenue to funnel the money, bro.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I don't think that there are many HBCUs that could come up with $300,000, you know, when, mm-hmm. when there's some HBU presidents that ain't even making $300,000, bro.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, real talk.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it's one of those things where how do you talk to a teenager and a teenager's parents who maybe might be our age right now,
mm-hmm.
that may have been struggling, maybe college educated, may not be. But right. You say, hey, XYZ State University, major D1 school who's always ranked in the top 25 for basketball, is going to give us $250,000 to spend a year there. Or you can go to Alcorn State, and which may be, you know, in your hometown, home state, mm-hmm. but you just got mm-hmm. some pride.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You got a city on your back. You got a school on your back, but you can't really make as much money because, you know, the market's not as big. You know, maybe you can get a couple of local businesses to line your pockets a little bit to, you know, use your name on a poster or say, hey, we got a burger named after you or some shit, like, you know what I'm saying? To pay a little bit of money. It becomes a bidding war, which I don't think HBCUs are necessarily equipped to handle.
Yeah.
Especially mm-hmm. now, feel me on this too, because you talked about certain, you know, administrators and their shortcomings. You know, there've been a lot of improprieties throughout, mm-hmm. You know, historically black colleges and universities, you know, financially speaking, that have, you know, been public, and I ain't trying to shit on nobody. It's just, it's fact. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. Now, you're putting basically the, you know, you putting the hooker back on the stroll, but you don't expect her to turn no tricks.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not really something that is conducive to having a solid and honest operation. There's always, you know, when you got dishonest people doing dishonest things and you give them more opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of hard. I mean, it muddies up the whole thing. And that's not to say the D1 schools aren't dirty. These are the dirtiest motherfuckers on earth because they got the money and the mean. So, I mean, I'm not saying that HBCUs are dirty. That's not what I'm saying at all. But what I'm saying is that when your microscope is a lot bigger, because, okay, out of all the schools in the world, let's just say the number one basketball prospect decides to go to whatever HBCU. Are you equipped to deal with those eyes? Because they're immediately going to start saying, well, what did you do to get him there?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? I mean, there's going to be that extra scrutiny because of the fact that you beat out some, you know, historically white institutions.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? I mean, are we equipped to deal with that as an institution and to say, hey, look, he just wanted to come here, but they're not going to leave it at that. They're not going to leave it at that. And I'm saying that if you got people that are in charge that are used to doing things below board, if that is the case,
it's gonna
be ugly. It's gonna be real ugly.
Yeah, I mean, they're gonna put
get ugly real quick.
Yeah, they're gonna put people on the case to say, hey, you know, what's going on with this change, you know, this shift in the paradigm or whatever. But I think it takes one or two individuals to at least just change the focus of how things are. I mean, if you just look throughout history, and you know, of course, we've seen what you know, what integration has done, and it just sort of is like, we'll take your talent, but you know, you keep your schools, we'll just take your talent and make billions off of it.
Ladies and gentlemen,
right? And it's something, you know, we talked before as far as on another episode about you know, the dynamics of spending your dollar wisely in the black community and the black business, right? If it's tit for tat between an Asian business, for an example, and a black business, and if, you know, if there's an opportunity to spend in one place, or spend in this case, meaning use talents one place. And even if it's not what you used to, or it might be slightly less quality, and I'm not saying that that's always the case, but what is it in the long run?
I don't know because
we said it before.
Dollar football facility, bro. So it is what it is on that shit.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. I mean, you know, when you look at the facilities across the board, I mean, it's hard to compete with that shit. That is what it is at this point.
Yeah. It's just you're making rich people richer when they're in HBCUs are called low resource schools by the NCAA. That's what they're deemed as, low resource schools. So they have some of the scores. It's slipping my mind right now. But they have a scoring pattern that by which they have to, from their academics, and I think it's two or three things, criteria, but basically they have to reach certain scores each year in order to stay eligible for postseason play, for playoffs, for anything like that. And a lot of those are driven by them being called lower resource schools. Well, they're lower resource schools for a reason. And so my thinking, just off the top, we can draw all the comparisons and contrasts all day. But if I know that there's a chance to enhance a lower resource school, if you just take away black and white, just say, hey, there's a school over here that's in need. Here's a school over here that has $1 billion in endowments. Who do I want to help? You know, if you just bring it down in those terms, and that's what black empowerment is all about. It's just sort of helping, you're gearing towards those, using resources wisely in an environment, and you create an institution. An institution is one that gives and receives. But you give to thing, it, and it gives back to you.
Already built the institution. This is much like, I mean, our black athletes have already, when you talk about the billions, it's almost a mirror image of how our ancestors built America, right? It is the same. It is a mirror image of each other. You're talking about indentured servitude, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you got to put in this amount of work, make me this much money. And you can't go nowhere until you do it. Now, obviously, it's not. I don't want to draw the comparison because I don't want to be irresponsible in that particular nature. But what I'm saying is that the capitalization of free labor is the common thread there. So, I mean, I don't want nobody, you know, on my nuts talking about, oh, he tried to compare it to slavery. No, motherfucker, I didn't. What I'm saying is that the common thread of free labor is the same type of, it's used in the same manner to build the NCAA, you know, the power conferences and the big schools. Is the same way from an athletic perspective as the way that the United States was built. Because you got these kids that have historically, even if they've made something under the table, it's been, you know, very microscopic compared to the type of money that has flowed through the hands of these schools from the NCAA. I mean, you got some motherfucking money, man, when you can put a cupcake on your football schedule, like University of Alabama puts, you know, whoever on their schedule.
Yeah.
And, you know, they pay him $600,000.
Yeah.
That's the kind of money that's going through. You see what I'm saying? They come get this ass whooping. We need
and more.
You know.
Yeah, we're gonna pay you to get this ass whooping.
We're gonna pay you to get this ass
whooping. Pay you handsomely. A lot of them pay them a very high percentage of what their budgets are.
Right.
You know.
Exactly.
So what really happens is
they still make a profit because they get all the parking. They get all the concession. They get all the tickets. They get all the luxury boxes.
It's a home game for them.
So it's basically just, how much can we afford? Okay, yeah, because they're probably making $6-10 million a game. Easy. Yeah. That may be on the low side. That might be on the low side.
You throw in all the media rights and stuff too. Exactly. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, we give you $600,000. That ain't nothing.
The budget for Alabama's budget is more than 10 times that of Florida A&M, for an example. AMU has about a $10 million AD budget, and Alabama's just over 100. And that in a nutshell, and just using FAM, because I went there, but you know, and I just happened to know that number, but FAMU is one of the top five, if not top three, historically enriched sports school HBCUs. Shout out to Jake Gaither, who put them on the map back in the 50s. But so comparing one top maybe HBCU athletic school to another, Alabama, and you just see the difference in their AD budgets just at that. I mean, it's a bigger school as well. But at the same time, we know why. And I mean, again, I just go back to integration, man. It's it just really has torn down a lot of things, black businesses just in general. Where we're gonna take your best folk and those mom and pops y'all worked at, you know, y'all keep doing what y'all doing, but we're gonna take because we have the money to pay, you know. And to take care, we bring you to the campus, right? And then they see all this illustrious or whatever facilities are top notch, you know, state of the art, this and that. Boom, it's easy to wheel in people. And I mean, for any of us, I mean, I understand if you work for somebody and you know you go on an interview or something, you say, wow, you know, it's pretty nice here. Or you buy a house or anything. People want nice things, but where do we sacrifice certain things to where we know that 10, 20, 30 years from now, whatever, that this person's decision can change the whole dynamic of something? You know what I'm saying?
So where does it start, man? I mean, what is it real succinctly, what does it look like to you?
Where does it start with the change?
Exactly.
It just has to start in the mentality of the parents, which gets to that kid, man. it has to start with the mentality, and the encouragement to do something, and that perhaps, hey son, if you go here, and I say it could be a woman, but I'm just thinking, you know, football mainly, because that's the key revenue driver. So hey son, this is why I encourage you to go here. It is bigger. You can be the Kurt Flood of college football. You can be the next Muhammad Ali, like someone that has broken barriers. I mean, I'm thinking Jackie Robinson, people who have broken barriers and has can set the print. You can do that. It's that, and I'm sure across the country there are recruiters who are having this conversation 10 times a day, right? About the history of HBCUs or whatever. But I think if somebody on it starts there. To answer your question, I think it starts with the mentality of the parent versus just saying, yeah, my kid's going to Carolina, you know, starting running back, this and that, you know. Don't let that be your only choice. That's all I'm saying is just...
Yeah, because, you know, my whole thing is this.
Don't let that be your only choice.
What they don't see is this. They saw 3 first round picks, you know, come out of Duke when Zion was there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they don't talk about the other 11, 12 dudes that was on the team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everybody is going to be that particular one. You know, so you got to think, yeah, if you're good enough to get a scholarship to Carolina, you know, you should be the man at an HBCU just based on the resources and things.
Should be.
And, you know, historically.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say this young man's name, but when we get off, I'm going to talk to you about a dude that probably should have gone to an HBCU and probably would have been the man. But he fucked around and went to Carolina. And got buried. Roy Williams buried his ass on the bench for whatever reason. But he, dude, I'm telling you, this dude had a okay.
Mm-hmm.
He was Zion Wilson, Zion Williamson on YouTube and Instagram before Zion Williamson was.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
You know exactly what I'm talking about, don't you?
From okay. Columbia,
and fucked around and went to Carolina and got buried.
Yeah.
He would probably never go pro.
Yeah, he won't.
But at an HBCU, he could have got 4 strong years of play.
Yeah.
Got nurtured in the proper manner. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And not have his psyche fucked up.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? So, yeah. You know, we got to think about it. So you're absolutely right with the parents, man. My whole thing is this. It just takes one to outwardly say, this is where I'm going. It takes one to say, look, game's over. I'm tired of getting pimped. If somebody's going to make money off of me, at least it should be a school that can get more people after me that with the same mindset so we can start the shift.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? It's going to take a different type of mentality, man. But as I said before, man, these football players, man, you run a 4.2, 4.28, 4.29 at Alabama. That's that same 4.2, 4.29, 4.3 at Alabama A&M.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's right. That's right. It's the same stopwatch.
Right. You don't slow down just because you go to an HBCU. If you got a 40-inch vertical, you know what I'm saying, at Carolina, you got a 40-inch vertical at North Carolina A&T.
Yeah, and the again, they'll find you. I mean, I'm thinking about I think you just said A&T, Tariq Cohen a few years ago.
Right,
he 5.
That's what I'm saying.
He 4'11".
That's what I'm saying. Based on the physical manner of it, he should not be in the pros. But his talent was so undeniable.
His talent was. I loved it, man. I watched that kid live.
I did too, man. On a couple games on TV. But it's like his talent was so undeniable that somebody said, you know what, man, if we pass on this dude, man, somebody going to get him. And he's going to turn out to be some shit. Now look at him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's the point, man. You will be found.
You will be found. And another thing in this day's
social media, you can promote yourself.
Yeah.
It's not like, I mean, you don't have to send out VHS tapes like they did in the 90s and shit. In 2000s, yeah. You know, you ain't got to have your coach talking about, yeah, this is so-and-so, 6'4", 225.
You just YouTube it, yeah.
You know,
send a YouTube link.
Dude, yeah. Everybody has a cell phone. Cell phones take 4K video, dude.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You can upload from your cell phone directly to your own fucking YouTube channel.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is what I mean, they will find you. If they don't find you, find them.
You have to do things on purpose. We all have to do things on purpose and say this is why I'm doing it and stick to it. But yeah, I think it's all in the mentality. And nowadays with the surgence of racial injustices sort of in everybody's eyes and ears today. It's like the HBCUs looking over like, are y'all ready to holler at me now?
Right.
Because some of the schools too, you know, you see some uprisings, even on Clemson's campus, they renaming halls and they taking down all these. So it's like a lot of racial tension that you won't see, you know, more so on those campuses, HBCUs. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm sure. Right. I mean, you know, you can't get rid of white supremacy, right? Howard was named after a white man. You know, you go down the list, Spelman, Morehouse. These are, a lot of them were named because of, you know, those are the so-called abolitionists that gave monies and things, whatever. But so, I mean, you know, some things you just can't get rid of, but you're going to find a lot less racial matters because majority of you are black, and a lot of people have problems with HBCUs. They're saying a lot of them are, you know, a lot of white folks and age, you know, non-black students are going. It's becoming more diverse, but really on the grand scheme of most of the top ones, if you will, populated top ones, I mean, they're really not. You go down the top 20 largest HBCUs, most of them still have more than 75% black population. Just look it up. They still have black administrators, professors just come and go, teachers come and go. With it, I think it's a mixed bag here and there. But you know, if they keep leading, if we have the right leadership in place, with the right focus, some of the athletics, and I will say this from experience because I've interviewed a coach, HBCU head coach, and a commissioner before, and a lot of them do not aggressively recruit players because they know they can't. Because they feel it's hard to do so because of some restrictions of monies as well. But I think as long as they have the mindset, the parents have the mindset, and those who go out and physically recruit outside the coaches and ADs have the mindset, we can wheel in some players, man. I think that's where it starts. Everything starts with a mindset.
Also, I think too, man, that with the, even if you don't get quote unquote the top names out there, man, you should still be going after them, and you should put your hat in the ring for some of the other players that are out there as well.
Exactly.
And you know, you get the right coaches, because the good coaches is invaluable, man. And you start making noise, man. You start going to beat some of these people too.
Yeah. And in the meantime, we have to do what we can to rally behind some of these schools who really need. You're still going to recruit with facilities too. So if you see things in media or something about some pledge that a school is having. We live in Charlotte, and sometimes, you know, you might see something on John C. Smith, which is a small private school. If they're trying to build or do something, get some attention and see if it's something you can donate to. Those little things help, because if they're trying to help with their facilities, that'll help, you know, as well. So it you know, we have to also find a way to give. I'm a member of the Alumni Association, and ultimately that helps give back scholarships and give back to the school as well. So if you're not an alumni, find a way to just sort of say, put that into your list of philanthropy somehow. That's just another way that you can help directly as a, just as a, you know, an individual.
All right, man, that's what it is, man. And in addition to Apple Podcasts, the podcast is now available on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and CastBox, Podbean, with more outlets to come in the future. Actually, we got more outlets already because they're hijacking the RSS feed and putting us out there, so we appreciate it. You can also connect with us on the social media platforms on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at ICBW Podcast. That's at ICBW Podcast. Be sure to like, comment, follow, subscribe where appropriate. You can also check us out on our website at ICBWpodcast.com. Fred, you got anything else, player?
Nah, brother. Be good, be safe, and behave, man.
That's what it is, man. And we out.
I could be wrong, but I doubt it. So don't enter this debate if you ain't about it. Reflection and introspect. Make sure that you come correct, and you should probably hurry. It gets crowded. Bring a friend with you. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. Don't enter this debate if you ain't about it. Reflection and introspect. Make sure that you come correct, and you should hurry up. It might get crowded. Bring a friend with you. Expression Reds, their curators are cool. The culture and consciousness brought directly to you. Tune in every week for the newest of new and occasional politics as it pertains to you. Divergent point of views make for a whole picture, and we suggest you get your money up and take the shit with you. Ain't no fountain to you, but it's a secret elixir to ensure the black man as a permanent fixture. Standing here in America behind enemy lines, where more often than not my skin's considered a crime. Cops kill us daily and will never do time, while a crooked ass judge decides to fate for mine. One day at a time is what my mama would say, and since mama said living ain't no time to play, and since I got a little game, I'ma give it away. But let's start the show before I get carried away. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. So don't enter this debate if you ain't about it. Reflection and introspect. Make sure that you come correct, and you should probably hurry. It gets crowded. Bring a friend with you. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. Don't enter this debate if you ain't about it. Reflection and introspect. Make sure that you come correct, and you should hurry up. It might get crowded. Bring a friend with you.
You just tuned in to I Could Be Wrong, But I Doubt It, hosted by Fresh and Reg. Holla back next week.